the entire duration of the nurse strike, that safety isn't really what's number one important. Profit is number one important for them. If safety were important, they'd have the nurses that work in this hospital back in this hospital Friday morning. But they've told us, in no uncertain terms, we're not welcome back until Sunday. That means replacement nurses who don't know the policies, procedures, and protocols in this hospital are going to be taking care of patients and trying to figure it out on the fly.
Do you feel like this move is sort of retaliatory or like punishment from Providence?
I can't speak for Providence. I don't know what they're doing or why they're doing it. I know how it feels.
Yeah.
As a nurse, I know how it feels, and I can empathize with my colleagues. They were herded into a supply closet this morning so that security could escort them out. As you can see, there's a fence all the way around the hospital.
Yeah.
The illusion is that the nurses are causing this problem. And truthfully, all we're asking for is a fair shake. Mm-hmm. We want to be able to take care of our patients and keep our nurses in the hospital so that they can take care of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just silly that the amount of confusion and chaos that I feel Providence is trying to bring.
So, makes sense.
Yeah.
What's your name?
My name is Rebecca.
And what do you do here at Providence?
I work as a labor and delivery nurse.
What's your name?
Jessamyn.
And what do you do here?
I work in the pediatrics.
What's your name?
Leah. I work in pediatrics.
And how are you guys feeling today? It's day one of the largest nurses' strike in Oregon history. Well, what's the vibe?
Everybody's super pumped.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. We're just, you know, it's great to feel so much support from so many people in the community, and also it feels like having us all, all like the collective decision making that we've all been doing so far has been really, it's just very encouraging.
Do you think they're hoping you just give up?
For sure, there's some of that. I think they're hoping that we will, do our 3-day strike and then come back and be willing to take whatever they offer, and that's not the case. We definitely, there is a possibility that if they continue to not negotiate in good faith, that we could be back here on the streets again this summer. We'll see.
That wraps it up for this evening's Labor Radio Show, this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. We've been listening to Providence nurses on strike on the picket line the first day of the strike at Providence St. Vincent's Hospital Medical Center in West Portland. You've been talking with Gabriella, an ICU nurse, Janaea, Chloe, Jody, emergency room nurses, Rebecca, a labor and delivery nurse, and Leah, a pediatrics nurse. I'm Jamie Partridge with my co-host, Laura Wadlin. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Hi, this is Melissa Lesniak, the creator and host of That Vegan Show. On That Vegan Show, you will hear in-depth guest interviews on vegan-related topics, such as companion animals, environmentalism, social issues, and food and nutrition. We also learn about specific animals such as possums and rabbits, including their needs and ways to help them. Be sure to tune in to That Vegan Show on the fourth Friday of the month at 11 a.m. right here on KBOO Portland.
This is Medea Benjamin. I hope you listen to Community Radio, KBOO 90.7.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? Yeah.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli, and today we're here with Jaleel Muntakim. How are you doing, Jaleel?
Hey, my brother. Assalamu alaikum. Peace, paz, bagani, jambo, herin, hapin, gugda, hafadea. Whatever your name, native language is, I wish you a peace and a solidarity. How my brother doing, Adam? How you feeling, man?
I'm good, man. Alaikum salam, jambo, and appreciate all the greetings, and definitely for all of our listeners out there in the world. You know, some people might be familiar with you. You've been on the show before. We've talked about you before on the show when you were still inside. But some people might not know who you are. You have a long durée of history that will go into the annals of world history, and we're still making it too. So can you just give a maybe kind of brief background of how you got involved with things?
Yeah, certainly. I'm a veteran member of the Black Panther Party and the Black Liberation Army. In 1971, I was captured for activities regarding my work with both Black Panther Party and Black Liberation Army. And I did 49 years in New York and California penal slave system. After my I went in 1971 to get out until 2020. And at that time, I got back into the struggle again. I work now for an organization called Citizen Action of New York. I'm the Special Project Coordinator for Citizen Action of New York. While I was in prison, I was able to organize the first national prisoners newspaper in the country called Arm the Spirit, organization to the United Nations for prisoners and the issues of prisoners and political prisoners. The 1998 established the first national organization in support of political prisoners called Jericho Movement. Myself and Sister Sophia Asa Bakari and Baba Herman Ferguson. Unfortunately, each of them has joined their ancestors. So I'm the only living founding member of the Jericho Movement. I've been in existence almost 23 years now, the premier organization for the political prisoners in the United States. In 2018, I initiated the campaign International Tribunal in the Spirit of Mandela campaign to have international jurors come to the United States on the issues of genocide, so the question of genocide. And on October 22nd to the 25th, we had International Tribunal at the Malcolm X Betty Shabazz Memorial Education Center in Harlem, whereby on October 25th, 2021, the United States was found guilty on the charges of genocides. I'll make that point explicitly clear. The United States was found guilty on the charges of genocides against Black, Brown, and Indigenous people by esteemed body of international jurors. If this had been Korea or China or Russia, that news would have been all over the world. They had been found guilty of genocide against people of their country, right? Unfortunately, there's a silence on that issue here in the United States. Why? Because the United States supports genocide. If we all understand the law or understand the history of this country, it's based upon the genocide of the indigenous communities, indigenous nations in this country, as well as the enslavement of African people. And so when we look at the world today and see what's going on, particularly in Gaza and the United States in support of the Zionists in Gaza, right, then we have to understand that it is according to the history of this country. They support genocide and they support enslavement of people. They have been and they continue to do so. And so for us, it is important that we come together and recognize this country has not served the best interest of particularly people of color, right? That we live in a system that's based upon the aberrant principles and ideals and concept of white supremacy. And as a result of that, we have suffered throughout history. We have suffered in this country. And in as much as we have suffered in this country, we've also resisted, right, the racist oppression and repression of this country. And that's the reason why the Black Panther Party came into existence. That's the reason why they had the Black Liberation Army. Right. So today, as I said, I work for an organization called Citizen Action of New York. I'm a special projects coordinator. And in doing this work, we are engaged in a campaign to end penal slavery. And we'll talk about that a little more. But I want to hear more questions or what do you have to say? Because I can go on and on. you know, I got some things to say. Well, but we don't have that much time.
So and you've also written a lot too, and people should be aware of your writings. We are our own liberators, different poetry books, and a lot of things that that we definitely have a lot to talk about. And we're definitely talking about human rights today, and how that relates to a lot of ongoing projects that that people are taking on nationally, in their respective states, and then you know, throughout the country as well, the 13 Forward, and how that relates to human rights, how that addresses all of the you know historical, not only human rights violations, but international. You know, I mean the whole larger platform. You know, it's not just here in the U.S. It relates to a lot of different things, like you already mentioned Gaza and what's going on there and the whole ball of wax. But yeah, let's hear about the 13 Forward and what that project entails.
A 13 Forward is a campaign to end penal slavery in the United States. A lot of people don't understand that the 13th Amendment was promulgated in 1865 that ended chattel slavery, the African slavery of the slavery of African people in this country. And as a result, the law has an exception clause, because the law says that slavery and voluntary servitude shall not exist in the United States, I'm paraphrasing, shall not exist except for those who have been duly convicted of a crime. So essentially what we have is a system that's based upon the ideals of slavery. Now, the International Tribunal, in our decision by them, they determined that mass incarceration is in violation of human rights, right? That is part and parcel of genocide, mass incarceration. And we know we have genocide and we have mass incarceration in this country, right? This is the industrial country that has more people in prison than any other industrial country in the world, right? This country does. And as a result of the law, these individuals we have in these institutions are actually treated as slaves. There's two laws, Ruffin versus Commonwealth. As one example, it says the Supreme Court states that prisoners are slaves of the state. That's the law. Okay, and so what we're doing in our campaign to end mass incarceration, we're demanding to remove the incentive of slavery, of profit, from the free labor or pennies on a dollar labor that they are obtained from those they have incarcerated. All right, we're also trying to change the dynamic in regards to how we understand these individuals who are in these institutions, right? Rather than consider them slaves or prisoners, this person is equivalent to being a slave based upon the law. Not what Jalil says, that's what the law says, that prisoners are slaves of the state, right? Then we need to make them part of the incarcerated, make them part of the working class. And so we want to start identifying and name our people who are incarcerated as incarcerated workers and link them to the working class, right? And by doing so, we change the dynamic of the slave system and we begin the process of ending mass incarceration. By removing the incentive, the monetary incentive of keeping people in a system of slavery, right? So we're going to be demanding that these individuals, our incarcerated workers, receive at minimum wage for their work and for their labor, right? And in doing so, essentially, we are taking the incentive away from this idea of mass incarceration, the school-to-prison pipeline, or school-to-slavery pipeline, is actually what it is, school-to-slavery pipeline, that they have across this country, running our young people into the system of slavery, right? We're saying enough is enough, right? We have to become abolitionists. Right? In this instance, when I say abolitionists, we need to abolish anything and everything that dehumanizes, degrades, and devalues Black people, right? Brown people, indigenous people. If it does that, we need to abolish it. And in the same regards, we need to abolish the penal slave system that we have in this country. And by doing so, we're challenging a system, a genocidal system of mass incarceration, as has been found by the international jurors on October 25th of 2021.
Jalil, there's been a lot of discussions, and there's been a lot of reports that have come out over really many years now, actually, about all the labor that happens inside prisons. And at the same time, the general public still doesn't have much of a clue really what's going on. Can you give a kind of just a debrief on sort of what that looks like? I mean, maybe as per your experience, even in New York State, and also in your case, refusing to engage in prison slavery, as you put it.
As a fact, in the 49 years that I did inside both now California and New York State prison system, I never worked in industry. right? They never work in the mess hall. The two primary areas where they demand these incarcerated workers to work. And if you don't work, then they'll lock you up in your cell. All right, there's a possibility of losing your parole. Are you losing your visits? Are you losing your packages? Are you losing your opportunity to go out for recreation if you don't work? So work is, you are compelled to work. Otherwise, you're locked into a cell 2 or 3 hours a day. So that's compulsion to work, right? There's punishment if you don't work. That's slavery, okay? And so in this instance, I have refused and many times to, when they try to assign me to those kind of jobs, I refuse. I refuse to allow them to make profits off of my labor. Now, there are corporations that are attached to these institutions, to these penal slave systems, who are making money, making millions of dollars off this free labor, or pennies on a dollar. In New York, there's a group called, organization called CoreCraft. And CoreCraft receives all the products made by New York State penal incarcerated workers, including state office building file cabinets, furniture, utilities, all the things that they make inside the institute, clothing, goes to state facilities throughout New York State, right? Pennies on a dollar, right? So we are essentially upholding the system of New York State in terms of their social services and state institutions, state operative government operation institutions, right? Incarcerated workers are maintaining that system. Okay, very similar to how this country became as wealthy as it is by virtue of African slaves and the decimation and annihilation of the indigenous people of this country. And so we have to learn lessons of the system and how to function and how it operates. One of the campaigns that we are building towards is called 13-4. People can go to 13th4.org and learn more about this campaign. We need people to join this campaign to end penal slavery in this country. That is one area. We know that Victoria's Secrets, their clothing wear, is made by convicts, made by incarcerated workers. Other brands that are made by or performed by incarcerated workers. Right? We need to know who they are, what they are, and establish a campaign boycott. BDS, right? Boycotts, sanctions, and divestment. Right? We need to make an argument for divesting these corporations that are a link to the incarcerated workers, a link to these penal slave systems like CoreCraft, like PayPal, like these other type of services that they have in for these institutions. We have to identify them. We have to go against them. We have to challenge them. We have to build this campaign of 13 forward in order to challenge the system of mass incarceration, challenge the school to slave system pipeline, and ensure that we are moving towards a greater capacity to liberate ourselves.
So there's been, I mean, this is a nationwide thing. At the same time, there's certain states that have really picked up on this specifically and have been really, you know, moving it forward, as you call it. Can you talk about what the progress is at with certain states that have probably made the most initiative at this point?
There are 8 states that have already changed the constitution of their state to remove compulsory labor from out of their constitution. California have bills pending, and New York State has 2 bills pending that we are moving toward building a campaign to end penal slavery in both California and in New York State. And I believe that Baltimore or Massachusetts are moving that direction, and also Illinois is also moving that direction. I'm not certain about Texas. I think Texas is the hangout, and Alabama is also a holdout in regards to these areas. But these are the kind of campaigns we need to organize across this country. And that's what we are doing in terms of Spirit of Mandela campaign. Having found that the United States has been found guilty of genocide, we are assuring that one of the issues, because there were 5 issues that was raised during the tribunal, Indiana's tribunal, and there was mass incarceration, health inequities, environmental racism, resistance to political prisoners, and the state-sanctioned murder, police murdering of our people. And cumulatively, when we look at all 5 of these issues, we can see how they basically amount to create the conditions for genocide of our people. And so 2 campaigns that we're working on right now that we can build upon based upon the decision of the international jurors, and one is to end mass incarceration that they found guilty of, and also health inequities. We should have a national campaign for universal health care in this country, right? And in so doing, we'll be able to challenge the kind of inequities that goes on in the health industries in this country by arguing for universal health care. Black people, brown people in this country have the highest degrees of a mortality, infant mortality rate than any other, particularly white folks in this country. The greatest levels of diabetes and heart ailments and all the moribund conditions based upon poverty, right? And the conditions of poverty that create these kind of ills that people suffer from. And so our campaign is to end them, to challenge them, to remove ourselves from a system of genocides, right? And by doing so, we're building towards what we call the People's Senate, right? And move forward in that direction. We feel that it is necessity for us to figure out ways how we can govern ourselves by removing ourselves from a system that is engaging in genocides against Black, Brown, and Indigenous people. And so we're calling for the organizing and building of the People's Senate. If people want to learn more about the People's Senate, they can go to www.spiritofmandela.org. Spirit Mandela, one word. www.spiritofmandela.org and tap over to the People's Senate and learn more about how we are building the People's Senate across this country.
Oh, that's great. You have so many projects going on. And, you know, one thing that's, I think, interesting is this language that's changing around how we talk about people who are incarcerated and using this term incarcerated workers. And I just wanted to ask you a little bit more about that, just in the sense that I know you and I have been in conversations even where some people even alluded to some idea that you know, there are some people incarcerated, they're not working. In your case, you rejected working. But that the term itself, you know, is still relevant for a lot of reasons, which is very simply to say, right, that we're talking about working class.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
Like who's getting locked up. Can you talk more about that, though, and really what that means?
One of the campaigns I'm trying to organize, I reside in Rochester right now, and so I'm trying to put together a panel discussion, what we call a town hall meeting, that will comprise of both the activist community, the clergy, the religious community, the unions, union officials, and elected officials together sitting at a panel to discuss these issues of mass incarceration and poverty, because poverty is the progenitor of criminal behavior or criminal activity. Of poverty. So we have to address the issues of poverty. Rochester, in my city, is the third worst poverty city in the country, although it's 80% employed. 80% employed. That means the majority of individuals who are working in Rochester are working for poverty wages, two or three jobs in order to make ends meet at poverty wages. And so we understand that there's a problem in terms of redistribution or the actual distribution of wealth in this country. And so we're making this argument to you, link our incarcerated workers with the unions. Right, so they are the ones supposed to be responsible for what goes on, workers' benefits and salaries and et cetera. Right, the unions. And if the unions are not organized, the unions are not being active, then naturally that affects the workers. And so for us to link the incarcerated workers with the unions allows us to create the conditions from which incarcerated workers, when they are released from these institutions, they go right into a union job and be able to provide for their families and their communities and not have to be concerned about recidivism and going back into a system of criminal behavior based upon the issues of poverty. And so there's a direct line, direct connection between the issues of poverty and criminal activity. And if we address the issues of poverty, then we're essentially addressing the issues of criminal activity. Right? And so we have to look at things very systemically, right, in terms of how they are evolved and how we challenge this system of mass incarceration. So, yes, we want to name our identify our people on the inside as incarcerated workers and link them to the unions on the outside, and so we can be a more holistic approach to healing our community and healing this nation by virtue of the process of struggle itself, what I call a revolutionary determination or revolutionary struggle. A lot of people ask me, say, Jaleel, why you identify yourself as a revolutionary, right? And I raise the question, if you look at the word revolution and you take the R off, what do you have? Evolution. And as a species, we are to evolve from one level of development to a greater and higher level of development. That's the evolutionary process. But sometimes you have to put the R on, right? And make that a revolutionary process of development. Why? Because the old will not just give up their power. They have to be ushered into the dustbin of history. And so that's a revolutionary process. All right, so me, I know it's important for us to evolve as a human species on this planet. And so therefore, it is important for us to identify ourselves as that process, being part of that process. And for me, that is what we call a revolutionary process. Right? We are changing the social order of society where we are ending the concepts where we are permitting mass incarceration. We are permitting this kind of school-to-prison pipeline, a school-to-penal slavery pipeline. We are challenging the relationship that unions have with their workers and making sure that there are more responses to the needs of their workers, and including that of the incarcerated worker.
And in the last couple hundred years, there was probably so many people who probably would have been skeptical about ideas around abolition of chattel slavery back in the day, not thinking that it could happen. And here we are hundreds of years later with similar systems at the same time that those old systems were relinquished in some ways. And so here we are now and people questioning, you know, some of these, you know, so-called radical ideas, right?
But it's radical. I mean, they're evolutionary, right?
We've
grown into a time and space where these ideas become manifested, where they resonate with our humanity, with our common humanity. And that's important. So that's part of the evolutionary process and regards our growth and development mm-hmm. as species on this planet. We are in charge. We're the vicegerent of this planet, right? And if we allow the greed, right, of the capitalists to continue to destroy this planet, then they're destroying our humanity, right? And for long as they continue to have us divided amongst each other by race and by class, they continue to win. They continue to profit over our labor and continue to destroy the planet. And we have a responsibility to prevent that from happening. You know, when I was a young guy in the movement, in Black Panther Party, Black Liberation Army, I thought we were going to have revolution in my lifetime. No, it's not happening that way. This is not a sprint. It is a marathon from generation to generation. Right, so I'm like I said, I live in Rochester right now. And who was the greatest abolitionist in our contemporary time? Frederick Douglass. That's the city of Rochester. Okay, and so for me to become an abolitionist is to raise the legacy of those shoulders of giants that we stand on today, right? Like Frederick Douglass, like Harriet Tubman, like Vincent Prosser, like Nat Turner, like Malcolm X, like Martin Luther King. Right, we have a history of resistance in this country that is not taught in our schools, or if there is taught in the school, they try to make it, they water it down. They try to make it compatible to a peaceful protesting.
Mm-hmm. Whitewash.
Whitewash, basically. You know, I don't want to say the word whitewash, but yeah, they whitewash it, you know, and so they can maintain the system of white supremacy. Right. In order to have a system of white supremacy, you got to have a population that are taught and believe that they are inferior to what is superior. You understand what I'm saying? So what we're doing is balancing that board, right? Even the score, right? And recognize that people are not inferior to each other, that we all have a stake in what goes on this planet. And it's important for us to understand that and be able to evolve cooperatively and with greater unity, right? Why is that important, cooperatively and greater unity? Because we live in a system that's based upon the ideas of individualism and competition. The opposite of individual and competition is cooperation and unity. Okay, so if the capitalism cannot exist if there's not individualism. Capitalism cannot exist if there's not competition. And so for us, it's imperative that we move towards greater unity and greater cooperation amongst the most progressive entities and most progressive organizations in this country. So that we have a common goal and objective to achieve, and it's based upon our common humanity.
So just some closing thoughts on a few things that you mentioned. When we talk about this platform about, you know, ending mass incarceration and 13th Forward, what are some ideas that relate to that? Because, again, that's another discussion that for some people gets very, you know, I guess confusing might be the word, in a sense they don't understand. Why would we still be talking about abolition today? Obviously, we know why, but some people kind of don't get how that premise connects to really sealing the deal and changing the system of mass incarceration that we have in America.
One of the problems we confront in incarceration is the population of the original name of this country is called Turtle Island by the indigenous. A indigenous population of the of Turtle Island is that, for the most part, we do not have understanding history. We don't have a full understanding, grasp of history. And that's because it's not taught in school. The history of resistance is not taught in school. History of compliance, right, is taught in school. History of complacency is taught in school. The history of go along to get along is taught in these schools and colleges and so forth to maintain the system of white supremacy and capitalist exploitation. And so for us, it is imperative that we go back into history and find those nuggets of those gems of resistance and find out how they relate to what we're doing today. I mean, I can go back all the way back to 1493 with the Doctrine of Discovery. And it says it initiated this kind of conquistador conquering around the world, right? Or the Monroe Doctrine, right? That replicated the Doctrine of Discovery, okay? That allows for U.S. imperialism to become the corporate government to become the police of the world, for the benefit of the 740 billionaires that control this country. So if we don't understand that history and where it comes from, then we have the possibility of repeating of that history. And that's what we find going on, for instance, what's going on in Gaza, right? We're not learned in the conditions of genocide, right? These racist systems like Zionism and white supremacy, because we have learned the lessons of our history in this country.
You've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Special thanks to our amazing guest today and Prison Pipeline Collective member Karen James for post-production. Free them all.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.